Hello, welcome to Cat the Baker. I'm Chef KB. I've been going to Body Pump a lot. I joined the YMCA. About every 14 minutes, there is a different YMCA, distance-wise. And I found the perfect YMCA. It has two pools, one indoor, one outdoor. It has a hot tub. It has body pump classes. It has state-of-the-art weights and everything you need for the gym. Except I don't really care about the gym part. I just care about the pool and the body pump. So I went to Body Pump today. I went 2 days ago. Basically, I try and go every 2 days. And I had this moment today as we're doing squats, like the music's super loud, the instructor's totally in the rhythm, getting everybody going, you know, like with this techno music blaring in the background. And I'm feeling it, you know, I'm super feeling it. I've got my weights on my back and I'm doing squats. And I had this moment where I got kind of teary-eyed. And I thought, wow, this is kind of a weird moment for that. I just felt so proud of my body. And maybe that sounds weird, but I don't think we appreciate ourselves enough. You know, like we're always on to the next thing. We always write down what we have to do next. And me especially, I create these lists and I'm always on to the next thing in my mind of what I have to do. I was getting teary-eyed and I was thinking, wow, like my body's so strong. You know, I criticize myself because, like, yes, I'm not super skinny. Not like I want to be super skinny, but I feel like there's always something that we aren't happy with on our own bodies. And I'm bad at that. I'm bad at that. Like, I do so much. I'm just really proud of what my body can do. And I thought of this all through Body Pump because I was thinking, why am I getting emotional when I'm doing squats? And I thought of after my first car accident, when I was in LA, I got rear-ended at a red light. I was a mess. My spine was fractured. I couldn't move. I couldn't even like turn my back. You know, I was super stiff. If I did too much during the day, I would pass out. I would have to take regular naps every few hours just so that I could rest. And honestly, in that moment, I didn't feel like I would recover from it. So there are moments in our lives that happen so fast from one day to the next, and everything is different. And that was one of those moments. It's because of that moment that I went to culinary school. You know, everything else happened after that regarding baking. But as I'm doing squats, I thought of that. And even in Aspen, after I went skiing, there were a couple times where I injured myself, my knee, when I fell kind of at a weird angle skiing. And again, it was like this quick second, you know, your knee's messed up. And it would take me like 9 months to recover. And I'd have to take it easy on my knee. They're just these injuries that we get. They happen so quickly. And then in that moment, you're like, oh, damn. Like, is it ever going to get better? And it does, you know, but you almost don't notice because you have this gradual daily pain until at one point you're like, oh, wait, I don't have that anymore. Like, it went away, which is great. You know, better to have that than have it stay forever. Because on the other hand, you know, I have pinky arthritis, which is actually not pleasant. Like, not like arthritis can be pleasant. The last couple of days, I could feel it get worse. And I take certain joint vitamins, you know, and I do feel that it is better after that. But if I'm working a lot and running around, you know, I feel it. Like, if I work a lot and I don't exercise, I have more body pain, you know? But sometimes just work is so physical and you have these long days that you don't want to exercise after. Like, that's a lot. So I definitely feel it when I don't exercise even more. But then if I go swimming, I can sleep better. Like my back is less achy. You know, it's like I was just standing like my whole career, pretty much. Because even before baking, I worked in restaurants and I was standing all day. I mean, I'd rather that than sitting. You know, there's different issues with sitting your whole life at a job. But anyway, I was thinking about that during body pump and I thought, wow, my body is so strong. And I was just proud of myself and I got teary-eyed because of just everything that has happened. You know, like to be able to go to that class and just want to go and have this energy. And I love body pump and I'm so happy that I'm able to do it here and that there are a lot of classes. You know, that's the nice thing about living in a city. You just have more options when it comes to that. And then after body pump, I go swimming and I do some laps and I kind of stretch and it's just refreshing. And then I'll go in the hot tub. I usually have to work at the hotel where I am now. Like I'm a pastry cook, not a chef, which I'm okay with. This is what I wanted for now. My schedule is usually that I'm there at 6 and it's union. So I'm done by 2:30 because I have to take a 30-minute break and I have to take a break before the 5-hour mark. If I don't take it before 5 hours, they have to pay me an hour extra. When things are union, you have to follow different rules. To be there at 6, I have to wake up at like 4:40 and then I have to leave by 5:15, which is fine, you know, because it's still very early, even though traffic picks up early as well. And then the hotel is about 22 minutes away driving and it's on the island of Coronado, which is technically not an island. It's a peninsula. So I did orientation at the hotel and it was a full day and they were talking about the history of the hotel. And I went to the hotel because I went to the beach with a friend and this was 2014. And I went to the hotel. It was very old looking, you know, and now they're redoing it and they're modernizing it and they're putting in lighter colors. But it was built in, like I wrote down these dates and now I don't remember, but I want to say initially 1818, but I think it's 1819. Maybe I'm getting that wrong, but it's around there. Okay. So this is when the hotel was built and there were two original owners. They bought the land. So the whole peninsula of Coronado, they bought all that land. And at that time, there was nothing on it. It was mainly for hunting. So people would come to San Diego at that time for hunting. You know, there wasn't much going on. And I think like 4,000 people lived here at the time. So then there was talk that the railroad was coming to San Diego. And then about 40,000 people moved to San Diego in the hopes of getting jobs with the railroad. But a year later, the railroad decided, no, we're not going to go to San Diego. We're going to go to LA. And if you've ever been to LA, there's this whole big section in downtown with the railroad. And the railroad goes right through LA. And you can take the railroad from LA down to San Diego even today. The railroad decided to go to LA. And then about 15,000 people left to go to LA. But the majority stayed here. And that was kind of the boom at that time. So these two owners that bought the peninsula decided to build a hotel. And they wanted to build it just for people that visited San Diego, you know, that part, who were interested in hunting. But the thing is, there were no skilled builders or workers. There weren't people with experience living in the area at that time. So they just hired anyone who wanted to build, and they needed quite a lot of people. So they started at the back of the hotel, which if you look at the architecture, It's very straight lines and very boxy. And they built the hotel in 11 months. But if you look at the front, the entrance of the hotel, it's very crafty and looks very skilled. There's a lot of intricate woodwork. And that's because these same workers became more skilled as they were building the hotel. So they did the front toward the very end, and it looks beautiful. Like, it's a beautiful hotel. And in the beginning, the water kind of went right up to the hotel. So sometimes it would get flooded because the water would get too high. You know, rarely, but it happened. And when the hotel was finished, the owners didn't have any money left. They thought it wouldn't need as much money as it did. And they sold it to, I forget the name, but he was a local cane grower and owned a sugar company. And he purchased the hotel when it was done. And he built a mansion opposite the hotel so that he could live in this mansion with his family and then walk over to the hotel and check to make sure everything was fine. But this mansion doesn't have a kitchen. It wasn't built with a kitchen because he hired a French chef that worked in the hotel, and he would make sure that the chef would have his breakfast, lunch, and dinner for him and the family every day. So he didn't even bother to put in a kitchen into this mansion, which is kind of funny. And again, this is like 1800s, right? And at one point, and I forget why, but there was an argument going on with the Navy. So the Navy would do their training and things on Coronado. And somehow there was an argument between the Navy and the hotel. So they put a bunch of rocks on the beach, because the hotel is set right in front of the beach, and they put a bunch of rocks in front of the hotel, you know, to make it ugly in front of the hotel. But it actually helped the hotel, because over time, more land, because of these rocks, kind of developed in front of it. So it increased the beach capacity in front of the hotel. So now, if you go to the hotel, there's like a field in front of it where they have weddings. And sometimes they have three weddings on one Saturday. So they were saying all this and the history about the hotel, which I find super interesting. I love all these like stories, you know? And they had some black and white pictures. And apparently the hotel is haunted. So a guest stayed there by the name of Kate Morgan. But apparently that was just an alias. It was not her real name. It turns out that she killed herself on the grand staircase in the entrance of the hotel. She brought a handgun with her and she shot herself. And apparently she was being wanted. I don't believe she was a criminal, but money was owed or something or other. Anyway, she shot herself in the hotel, and it turns out that sometimes weird things happen in the hotel. So they claim it's haunted and they claim it's Kate Morgan. And during orientation, there's a tunnel that connects one of the buildings in front of the hotel to the hotel. So we walked through this tunnel underground, and when the hotel was open, guests could actually walk under the tunnel. But you're walking through the tunnel and there's all these pipes and everything going through. So it used to be a power plant that was built right next to the hotel, and the tunnel connected. Apparently, back in the day, it was the place to hang out and make out, you know, so it was a quite scandalous place to go. So it was a very interesting day and quite fun to learn about all the history, you know. So the hotel's been there about 135 years almost, and they're remodeling it. It's taken about 6 years and they've spent $600 million. So it should be ready by next year. We'll see. But so far, I'm enjoying everything. you know, I'm understanding what needs to happen. I mean, obviously I was a manager, right? I was a chef for a long time. So I know what needs to be done. And I just go in, I prep, I do what needs to be done, and I leave, you know, and I'm fine with that. But it's a union hotel. So that means the negative thing is I want to work more, you know, so I can kind of catch up and get in sync with my bills and things like that, all the money I've been spending. But the longer you've been there, the more shifts you get. So if it's not busy, then the newest person gets cut, you know. So like this next week, I only have 2 shifts because they're remodeling the hotel. So there's less going on, which means they don't need me as much, you know. So that's like the crappy thing. At the same time, I'm getting stuff sorted out for my business. You know, I've been buying all the equipment I need. I've had signs made. I had my first order of 24 donuts, like the German crullers, and it went really well. You know, I did do it at home, like I said, and I only have a tiny fryer. So I had to get up at 4 a.m. just to make sure it was ready by 6 a.m. So I might have to get another tiny fryer if I do things more at home. I can't do it in the kitchen because that means I'd have to get there even earlier to do it and then leave. But the owner of the kitchen isn't there that early of the culinary school. He doesn't get there till like 7:30. So that's the negative part. And I have to kind of rethink if it's worth it for me to go with that kitchen or maybe go with a different commissary. I don't know. I'll have to research that. But as I was driving my order, right, I was driving it to one of the offices. And from there, I went to school to teach. But as I was driving, I got excited and again, emotional. I'm very emotional, right? I've always been emotional, but there's a lot happening lately. I mean, yes, I've changed my whole life, like again, but there's just, I feel like I'm going through a lot of shifts within myself. You know, I'm doing things that I've always wanted to do, but never really had the courage to do it. You know, and it's covered by a lot of fear. But at the same time, it's exciting and it's something that I want to do. But I guess I never knew how to go about it, you know? And once it's sinking in, once I've decided that I'm going to do it, it's just like every day I'm kind of going slowly and figuring out the next steps, you know? So I was driving this order and I got like emotional, being like, oh my God, this is the start of something. Like I just had this feeling. Oh, and you know, the main reason I felt this way as I was driving like 80 on the highway. Yes, I was speeding, something I do often. I was feeling this way. I had this very, very just real dream. I mean, I have a decent amount of dreams, but not necessarily dreams that I wake up with remembering. You know, this was very, very vivid. I was around like a table with my family. So my brothers, my dad, and my mom was there. But I didn't really talk to the rest of my family. I just saw my mom. And I went to hold her hand. And see, I can't even talk about it. I went to hold her hand. It was just like she didn't have to say anything. You know, like I knew that she was there for me. I said, I love you. And I held her hand. And then I said, why are you still here? You know, it's like in the dream, we all knew she had passed. She was dead. But it was like she was still there, you know, watching over us. And this like ethereal world, if you will. You know, she hadn't, like if you've watched that movie Ghost. You know, back in the 80s, you know, after they die and they feel they have to stick around, they do, you know, up until some point they feel like, okay, everything's fine. Now they can go to heaven or wherever they go, right? And in my dream, it felt as if she was in the ethereal world, like she was still there, you know, her presence was still there. And I said, why are you still here? You know, and she said, well, I'd love to leave with my dog, which was Duke, like the Great Dane that she had. And, you know, he was like her most beloved dog. But, you know, she didn't say a but it was just like, that's all she said. And then I just knew what she meant. You know, it's like she wants to go, but she feels as if she has to kind of stay. You know, and I don't know about all that. I mean, it's a dream. At the same time, it was very vivid. And I woke up and, you know, like now I have to wake up at like 4:40. So I woke up, it was 4:39. And I'm like, crap, I can't sleep again. You know, I've got like a minute. So I woke up like right after this dream. And that already made me emotional, you know, because I'm like, oh, my God, like it was so real. And when I dream about my mom, I get just like something like this, you know, it felt very real. And I just wanted to like stay in the dream and not wake up. Like when you dream about important people, you want to stay with them, right? So I woke up and then I'm like, oh, okay, I have to like go to work now. So that was the day before I was frying donuts, you know, in the morning when I got up at 4 a.m., so that was kind of the reason why, as I was driving, delivering these donuts, I thought of that dream. And I thought, you know, like maybe she's helping me. Like maybe she's helping me through this. Or that's what I like to believe. And I was listening to the podcast today. I listened to the Positive Mindset podcast. And I talked about this a couple of times. But I just feel like when I listen to it, it's only like 15 minutes long, not like mine. Mine's like endless stories. But I feel like when I listen to it, I always get something from it that helps me, you know? And he was saying that when you hit tough times, when something happens to you, it's not happening to you, it's happening for you. It's happening for you so that you learn from it and you grow from it and you become stronger. So we're saying, don't ask for easy times. Don't ask for something to be easier. Ask for strength. Ask for strength to go on and make it through this. And because you've made it through something that was hard, the next time it won't be so hard. You know, because life is not smooth. Things happen to you all the time, and some are tougher than others. You know, and I feel like I've gone through so many tough things, and we all have, right? But like I've talked about, this whole business thing, like my own business, I feel like this is one of the toughest things. And I know you might think, well, why is it that hard? I'm just getting equipment and setting up licenses, and I can't even explain it. It's just this other level of fear, you know? And I can't say I know exactly where it comes from. I know I've talked about it and maybe I've tried to figure it out, but whatever. Maybe I don't need to figure it out, you know? I just have to go through it one day at a time, see what comes up that one day, you know, and deal with it. So when he said, don't ask for an easy time, ask for strength, you know? Yes, like, I want to be strong to support myself. You know, I want to be strong to make this business a success. You know, I'm not looking to have like all these shops. No, like I just want the farmer's market to lead to a shop at some point. And so I can just make the things I want to make and not deal with, you know, owners and other people, chefs that make my life harder. You know, like that stressed me out. I mean, I know that having your own business, it's a different level, you know? It's a different kind of stress. But I think through everything I've learned and all the jobs I've had, I just feel like I'm ready for it. You know, even though I like to make excuses for myself and put things off, this is it, you know? This is it, and I'm doing it. And I just felt when I was driving and delivering that order that something was changing and I'm growing. It was like liberating, you know, something was different. And again, it was like that moment in Body Pump where I got teary-eyed and I was just like proud of myself, you know, even though Body Pump, I was like proud of like my body and being strong and overcoming physical pain, you know. But I mean, fear is so debilitating on all levels, physically, mentally, spiritually, emotionally. And this is the one thing that I just feel like has always blocked me, you know, for wanting my own business, you know. So as I'm going through this and these different phases, every day there's something else, I feel like, okay, this is positive. You know, I'm moving in the right direction. I really do feel that way. So now it's July. Tomorrow it's the 4th of July. And I know by the time you hear this, it'll probably be August. But, oh my God, I didn't tell you. My first farmer's market is July 23rd. I have a date. I have a set date, which of course I'm going to have to talk about that, right? Like, you know, when I messaged the manager of the farmer's market, one of the markets, and I said, okay, I'll start like 23rd of July. He's like, cool, just message me when it gets closer. And I'm like, okay. Like, I'm thinking I'd like this to be more of a set thing because I'm buying everything for it. But okay, you know, I guess I'll have to go by there next week and see what's going on. Oh, but when I delivered those donuts, like my first German cruller order, it was a success. Everyone ate the 24. I got paid and they asked where the shop is, you know. So that's positive. Unfortunately, I don't have one yet, but you know, I'm working on it. I'm working on it. And then mid-July, I'm going to Arizona with Rodolfo. He's going to meet my dad. My dad lives in Arizona. And you know, Rodolfo hasn't met my family yet. My family's spread out. My brothers are in Seattle and my dad is in Phoenix. So we're flying to Phoenix and he's going to meet my dad. My dad speaks Spanish because he was born in Argentina and Rodolfo speaks Portuguese. But I think, I mean, he speaks some Spanish, so they can communicate like that. And Rodolfo's dad is German. So I guess I could speak with him in German, you know. I'm learning Portuguese from Duolingo, but slow. It's slow going. And it's not that easy. It's not. But I do the Duolingo every day. I've gotten like 235 days in a row. So at work, you know, I'm prepping, I'm doing these lists, like things that need to be done. You know, I don't really have to think as far as when I was a chef. You know, now I don't make the lists anymore. I just see what needs to be done and I go ahead and prep. So these eclairs needed to be done. There's this market there. It's a to-go market, and you can buy desserts, you can buy pizzas, they have sandwiches, like paninis, and it's right in front of the beach. It's beautiful. So they have this market, it's called Eno Market, and they sell 13 desserts, and they're very nice desserts. We make all of them. So they have this mango mousse. They have creme brulee, they have an eclair, it's a hazelnut eclair. They have this almond flourless chocolate cake, excuse me, and a bunch more, okay? But we have to make them all every morning. So we were low on eclairs and I piped these eclairs and they had a stencil underneath so that they're all perfect. So I'm piping, you know, with this like open star tip. And I'm like, yeah, they're like pretty perfect, right? Like I made the pâte à choux and everything. I put them in the oven and I had three trays. I transferred the stencil to each tray as I was piping them and they're in the oven. As I start another task, I forget what I was doing, but I realized, oh wait, did I pull out the stencil? So the stencil was in this thin plastic, you know, it's kind of like a plastic that you use for chocolate work, kind of thin, but also sturdy. So I open up the oven, and this is toward the end, you know, so they weren't going to deflate. I open up the oven and I look under the sill pat and I'm like, oh, it's not there. Like, there's no stencil. I must have taken it out. But in my head, I'm like, I didn't remember taking it out. Like, where could it be? So it finishes baking. I take it out and I pull it up more, like the sill pat. And there it is. The stencil had shrunk to like a miniature stencil. Like, this whole plastic stencil had shrunk to, I don't know, this tiny, tiny sheet of plastic. And it wasn't a sheet anymore. It was like kind of thick. And it had these mini, mini eclair shapes on it. You know, it shrank a lot. And I was so embarrassed by it, you know, because I'm like, damn it. Like, I can't hide it. Because if someone else needs to use the stencil and it's not there, then they know that I used it last, right? And it's never good to hide things. So I said to one of the cooks, I said, I did something stupid. And they're like, well, what? What did you do? And I showed them this tiny stencil, which was originally the size of a large sheet tray, like 24, was it 24 by 32 inches? I forget the size of the sheet tray. I don't know, but it was big. And then at first they looked confused, like they didn't know what it was. And then they're like, oh, and then they couldn't stop laughing. And they showed the pastry chef and he didn't know what it was at first. And then I said, it's the Eclair stencil. And everyone laughed and he's like, this is perfect. And he put it up on the bulletin board to save. So now it's on the bulletin board and I can look at it every day to see how I messed up. Great. So at work, I say sometimes like funny things, like funny comments, and I make people laugh. So I did something weird again the other day. So one of the workers there, one of the cooks, she's really good at cakes. She does intricate cake work using fondant, you know, and I'm not that much into fondant, like these figurines, and she does all the details and it looks great. But she had this client, this customer, who ordered a 3-tier cake from her for her son. He was turning 8 or something. And he's obsessed with space and astronauts. So she handmade all these different planets, all these like spaceships, and was supposed to put a picture of this boy behind this astronaut helmet, which was made of sugar. You know, so she was telling me how, like, the chef helped her with the helmet. It was supposed to be sugar. So she showed me this picture of this boy in, like, an astronaut outfit. And his hands were sticking out. And I thought this was the figurine that she made out of fondant. And it looked so real. Like, it looked lifelike. And I said, oh, my God, this is what you made? It looks amazing. Like, she showed me a photograph of it, you know, on her phone. And she's like, no, that's just the real picture of a boy. Like, that's the boy. And just a photograph of the boy in an astronaut outfit. And I'm like, oh. And then everybody started laughing, you know? And I thought it was like the fondant figurine that she made with the picture of the boy behind the sugar helmet. Anyway, it wasn't. You know, weird things happen at 6 a.m. is all I'm saying. So then she showed me the actual figurine and it just had the face of the boy behind the sugar. And I'm like, oh, yeah, right. That looks like fondant. Like, why did I think that the real photograph was actual fondant? You know, like, I have moments like that where people just like laugh and I don't know if they think I'm like stupid or just trying to be funny, but I say these things like all day apparently, like just weird things, and they're just always laughing. So I guess that's good because the team likes me. I just try and be exact with the recipe, and I'm noticing that some people aren't so exact. They're not scaling exactly, so the product comes out differently every time. But the recipes are organized, you know, everything's in grams, everything is set and everything's beautifully in a folder, organized, like better than I ever did, you know, when I was organizing recipes, because I didn't organize recipes. So, but people still aren't making the recipes correctly and kind of guesstimating, you know, some people more than others. But I haven't been there long, like just a few weeks, and I feel like I'm seen in a positive light, you know, because I do the work, I do it exactly. I mean, how could I not? If I were slacking off now, if I were being lazy now, I mean, it makes no sense, right? Like, I was a chef. So as a chef, even though that's not my actual position now, like, why would I all of a sudden now be lazy and not do what needs to be done correctly, right? It's nice because I feel like they can depend on me to do things correctly. So tomorrow is 4th of July and I have it off and we're going to go see the fireworks. And apparently this is one of the largest fireworks on the western coast in San Diego. So over 500,000 people will be there on the waterfront to see the fireworks. And there's three different barges where the fireworks are set off. So I was thinking, okay, why don't we go there? I just like to see fireworks. I like to feel like it's a holiday. I haven't had holidays off, you know? So I feel like I just want to be a regular person and just do something touristy on the 4th of July, you know, instead of just working and coming home and being like, oh, that was a holiday, cool, you know? So, I don't know. Maybe it's a bad idea, but we'll see. And then this week, I'm going to organize my menu for my farmers market event. It kind of keeps changing because, like, I got this 4-cubic-foot freezer for the house, for the apartment. And it's small, but it's a good size, you know, so I can prep things in advance, keep them in the freezer, and then bake them like the day before, the morning of, you know, and just have things prepped in the freezer, which is good because if I have to pay to prep things in the commissary, like in the culinary school, I don't want it to take hours, you know what I'm saying? So I can prep cookie dough here, maybe do some cakes. So this is what my menu is. This is what I've decided, okay? I'm going to do German pretzels, my recipe. I'm going to do the German crullers, the German donuts glazed. I'm going to make gluten-free chocolate chunk German cookies, okay? Because cookies sell. And I think it's positive if they're gluten-free. So I bought this gluten-free flour, which is more expensive, but I think it's positive in the long run. I'm going to do Jell-O cups, I think, if there's kids, you know. So I'm going to put gummy bears on top of it. And that's not really German, but I'm doing it because I'm going to keep them in the cooler and I think it'll be refreshing if they have it at the farmer's market. And I'm going to make strawberry streusel bars. So strawberry streusel bars, if you say the German way. And it's a buttery dough on the bottom with jam on the top and then streusel on top of that, which adds a crunch. Okay. And also is German. And I'm debating, so I think that's five items. I have five items, but I'm also debating whether I should do these. They're Spekulatius cookies, and that's a German cookie. It's like a butter dough, but it has like some spices in it, and I'm debating whether or not I should do that. I don't know. I guess I can always change it up, but I want to have a set menu because I'm going to make this like banner. I want to do a professional banner with my pictures of my menu on it. So there's all these things to plan, you know. And I think I'm done, but then I'm like, oh, wait, I have to do this. And then I have to do this. And, you know, so I've bought a freezer. I'm getting these banners. I've got a tent. I got tables. There's just a lot of different things. And I've decided to not have a fryer at my booth. I'm going to fry the donuts beforehand and bring them. It's just too overwhelming. The fryer overwhelms me. And I'm just one person. How am I supposed to carry a fryer off of my car and onto my car? Like, it's, I feel like it's just asking for trouble. Maybe down the road, you know, when it gets more popular and I have a helper, possibly. But even a fryer is like $1,200, you know, because it needs propane. There's no electricity, you know, and that's another headache. Because then if I have this fryer, I have to get this hookup for the back of my car so I can put this fryer on the back of my car. And it's just like, I can't. Like, I would wake up at night thinking about this fryer situation. Like, it totally stresses me out. So I've decided to not have a fryer, bake everything before the event, fry before the event, and what I have is what I have. But I think that's okay. I mean, I'm still making it a few hours before the event. It's still going to be fresh. But on top of that, I have cookies and some other items. So I think it's positive. We'll see. I hope it's positive. But as always, I'll keep you updated. Thank you for listening to Kathy Baker. I'm Jess KB. Until next time.